Okay, so let's get started then. If we're holding on the Mishnah, we're holding at the Mishnah of Gimel Amud Beis, the bottom Mishnah, that is. Mishnah says, V'chein shnei anashim, similarly, just like we talked about in the previous Mishnah, you had two women, where each of two with two shvuyas, two women were captured, and each one says on her friend that each one says on her friend that she's tahor. Then we say we believe him. So we said if each one of them says on herself, then we don't believe her, because you need ages for that. But if one of them says on the other, then it's good. So v'chein shnei anashim, in the same way if you have two men. And by the way, Rashi adds over here a bit of a funny thing. Apparently, in the Gemara's times, there were some of them that had the gears of v'chein shnei anashim shenishvu, who were taken captive. And Rashi points out that's not relevant over here. What we're talking about, whether they're koyim or not, has nothing to do with whether they were captured. Mistama, what happened is Mistama, some copyist over there, was a Torah cipher. The previous Mishnah had said shnei nashim shenishvu. So by accident, he wrote down over here shenishvu over here. Yeah. Anyway, so two men. Who come to town, nobody knows them from before. Is there a Mekoyin Ani? Is there a Mekoyin Ani? Each one says on himself, I'm a Koyin, ain't in their money, then we don't believe him. You need actual Eidos for that. Or was Manchain hidden? There's there, but if one of them says Eidos on the other, Heril in their money, then we do believe him. And again, we're not worried about Goimlin. We'll talk about the Gemara, about the pros and cons of that. Well, they do know each other. If Reuben is saying about Shimon that he's a Koyin, and vice versa, yeah, obviously they know each other. The point is, we're not worried about, according to the Tanakhama anyway, that we're not worried about that it means like they colluded on this. Like, you know, let's come to town and you'll say I'm a Kohen and I'll say you're a Kohen, you know, yeah. We're not worried about that.
Because?
We'll see in the Gemara. Rashi points out, by the way, when we say that we consider them to be Kohenim, we do or don't consider them to be Kohenim, it means as far as giving them Truma. We'll talk about in the Gemara, what about other things that Kohenim do?
And if they say we're not a Kohen,
then it's not a Kohen. Rabbi Yehuda. If they're cold, that's a different matter. I don't know. We're not getting into that. Rabbi Yehuda, ain mal on the kohen al pi edah. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you can't raise somebody up to kohen based on one aid. So no, even if his friend is saying edus on him, that's not good enough. Amar Rabbi Loza, emasai bizman sheyesh erin. So Rabbi Loza says, you know what? When is that? When you have when there's an objection, when somebody is saying that this person is not a kosher kohen, that he's a kohen, then yes, I agree that you need two aidim. Avo was mancha ain urin, but if there's no objectors, mal on the corner al piyadecha, then yes, one aid is good enough. Which sounds like he's saying the same thing as the Tanakhama, and the Gemara is going to point out what the difference is. And one more opinion, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rav Shimon Ben Askan, mal on the corner al piyadecha. He also says that you can raise somebody up, you can assume that somebody is a Koyan based on one aid, which it sounds like exactly the same thing. So again, we'll talk about that. It'll be in the Gemara tomorrow. What Rav Shimon Ben Gamliel's in what way Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion is different than the other Tanaim. Now, so we've had in this parak, we've had a series of Mishnayos that deal with this whole business of edus, this whole business of a pesha also a pesha hitir, when a person says something versus there's edim. We had four different cases. We had the first Mishnah in the parak where we said moedir of Yeshua by the field. That this field belonged to your father and I bought it from him. Unless there's Edim, that it was the guy's father. Case number two we said was about the Edim who come to Beis Din and say these are our signatures on the document, but we were Tanim of Solim or what have you. Same thing we said. And we had the third and fourth cases were in the Mishnah on Amud Aleph that we had yesterday, where a woman says on herself, I was an Eshkesh, but now I'm divorced. And the fourth case where she says, I was a Shvuya, but I'm Tahar. And then following on from that, we had these last two Mishnayos, the one about the women from yesterday and the one about the two men from today, where each one is giving aegis on the other. The question is why we need all these cases. Kohani Lomel, why do we need all these cases to teach us a Pesha also a Pesha Hitzu? The answer is...
We never ask these questions for other Gemaras.
Right? Sure we do. Sure we do. And in Yevamos we had, for example, a few times that we had various cases that seemed fairly similar, and we asked why we need all of them. Yeah?
Well, the cases are similar.
Okay, so here we have four cases, four different areas in Halacha, where we say a Pesha also a Pesha Hitzu. Why do we need to be told all four of them? Tell us one, and we'll derive the other ones from it. The answer is seriously, we do need all of them. The Itana Moser Rabbi Yeshua, because if we only had the one in the case of the field, the one where we said that Rabbi Yeshua admits that even though, again, we said in the first parak he disagrees with the Migui, but he agrees with a Pesha Asa Pesha Hitu, we would say, you know why in that case we allow a Pesha Asa Pesha Hitu, Mishum de Ika Drora de Mamona. Because there is a Dror de Mamona over there. Dror de Mamona has two. The Rashi and Tosfos discuss in a few other places in Shas what Dror de Mamona means. One possibility is it means a possible loss of money. Now, what are we talking about over here? What's the person saying in that first mission of our parent? He says, this field used to belong to my father, and I bought it from him. We would say, obviously, fine, you want to give him a Pesha Asa, Pesha Hitzer over there. He's not going to voluntarily be going and saying this field was your father's and thus put his claim on it in jeopardy unless he intends to finish off his sentence and say, but I bought it from him. So you would argue there is a Dror de Mamona. There is a reason to assume that he's saying it in order to, that he's saying this field belonged to your father as an introduction to the next part that he's going to say, but I bought it from him.
What draw is a connection?
So that's what I'm saying. The Rashi and Tosfos discussed that it either means a connection. It either means a suffix on money, or it means a connection to the money. Whatever it is, yeah, whatever it is. Either way, the point is, in the case of the field, you have a draw de mamona. I will edim de like a draw de mamona, but when it comes to the edim, there's no suffix on them losing anything. They don't have any connection to the money. They're the unbiased parties who are signing on the document. Yeah. So you might think not. Maybe if they start saying these are our signatures on the document, maybe you just say, that's it. You take what they said at that. You don't apply a Pesha Asa, Pesha Hitzer to say, but they're allowed to say, but we were onus or whatever. Because not necessarily. Maybe they started saying that's Xavier Dana who's there. Maybe they were intending Mahatchila to say, you know what, that's it. These are our signatures. It's a valid star. And then as they're speaking, maybe they thought, you know what, that's better. What did I just say? Let me quickly find a way to salvage the situation. You know, so maybe we shouldn't apply it.
They're not losing any money.
They're not losing exactly. So therefore, aim aloy. So you might have thought that not. That's why we need to be told that a Pesha Asa Pesha Hitzer works in that case as well. The Itana Edim, conversely, if it only said the case of the Edim, then we would say, Mishum Dil Alma, because that's just it. The word, what the Edim are saying isn't helping themselves, it's helping a third party, it's helping somebody else, the Malver, whoever it is, who's written in the Shtar. So what would we say? In other words, we would say that, yes, we would say there's more of a logical reason, on the contrary, to think that once they said, you know what, if they said, these are our signatures, they're not going to all of a sudden be thinking mentally, wait, what did I just say? I better take it back. They'd have no reason to. It's not benefiting them by doing that. They. On the other hand, avol irudul nafshe, but when it comes to the field, what if the person really intended to say, this field was your father's, or maybe not intended to say, whatever. He didn't think originally of saying the second part of it. He first thought of saying, this field is your father's. Then having said that, he's thinking to himself, what did I just say? Oh, and I bought it from him. Amalois, you might think not. Maybe we shouldn't accept that Pesha Asa Pesha Hitzer in that case. It's sort of the opposite of the Gemara is taking it in either way. On the one hand, you could argue that with the case of the field, the point is the Gemara is saying, on the one hand, you could argue with the case of the field, L'chatchila, the guy intends to say the whole thing, because he's not going to dafka want to destroy his claim to the field. On the other hand, there's more of a chance over there that maybe he accidentally had a Freudian slip. He accidentally said what the truth is, and now he's trying to cover it. As opposed to the Edim, right? In the case of the Edim, on the one hand, we could argue that maybe if they do a Freudian slip like that, and they say the truth, these are our signatures, that maybe there's no particular reason for them to there's no Dror de Mamona, they have no connection with the money, therefore maybe we should say that we're not going to allow them to take that back by saying Anusim Hayinu. On the other hand, they're not. It's benefiting somebody else, not themselves. So therefore, on the contrary, maybe there's more reason to think that there they meant to say a complete statement. It's not chote. I mean, they're saying that this is. Okay, but I mean, in this case, where they already started by saying it was their signatures, so they're not being chote in that. Yeah.
Nothing to gain from saying a wrong edit.
All right.
That's proven, but
yeah.
To begin with, it's
right.
Nothing.
The Iyeshmin and Hanitar, then if we had only those two cases, we would say Mishum de Mamona. Yeah, but both of those cases are talking about money, the field and the Edus. Aval Eshes Ish the Isura, but when it comes to Eshes Ish, we're dealing with a matter of Isur, where if we were to take only the first half of what she says, that I was an Eshes Ish, she'd be also to everybody. Amaloy, so you would think maybe not. Maybe we shouldn't accept the second half of what she says. And therefore, we need that Mishnah.
Because she's gaining from
it. Not just because she's gaining. In the case of the field, you're also gaining. But in the case of the field, you're gaining mammon. It's a big deal. If we were to say, in other words, in the case of mammon, we accept the pesha off pesha hitter, we're going to give that leniency. But in the case of Eishes Ish, should we be applying that leniency? What if she really is an Eishes Ish? That's the chiddush. That therefore we need that.
We need
that if she completes her statement, we do accept that, just as we do with the field.
Because
Apesha Alsa Apesha, because the Torah tells us the concept of Apesha Alsa Apesha Hitir. And therefore, once we have that concept, we can apply it, even in the case of Isser.
Why is it different from
Because in general, we're more machmer on Isurim than on Mammon.
So that's not really Pishit.
But that's the thing. We would have thought that maybe Apesha Alsa Apesha Hitir only applies in cases where we can apply other leniencies. Maybe not in the case of Eishes Ish. And by the way, Mephoshim point out, the reverse is also true. You could argue that in the case of the woman who says, I was an Eishes Ish and I'm divorced, she doesn't have any chazaka of being an Eishes Ish up to that point. So you might have argued that there's more reason to believe her Apesha Alsa Apesha Hitir, as opposed to the case of the field, or the case of the shtar, actually. In the case of the shtar, what are you doing based on these edim saying that our signatures were invalid because we were possible or what have you? You're causing money to remain in one person's possession versus the other.
So that's the thing.
So the Gemara doesn't spell it out, but in other words, that's the idea. That's why we couldn't have said the other way around. We'll say it by Eishes Ish, and we'll derive from it the matter of money, because there it's a different thing.
And Eishes Ish is not necessarily more stringent, but some cases are more benign. Let's say
not really more benign, but the point is she doesn't have a chazaka and the money does have a chazaka. Okay, Nishbesi Utar Ani Lomali, so why do we need the fourth Mishnah, the case where she is, or actually the last half of the Mishnah from yesterday, from Gimel Amud Aleph, where she says, I was taken captive, but I'm still Tahar, Lomali, why do we need that? The reason is Mishum Dekabayu L'Misni, because the Mishnah wanted to continue with the statement, V'im Mishinissas Bo Edim Arezal Oteise, that if after she got remarried, Edim came, then we said she doesn't have to get divorced. Edim, that she was a Shavuya. That's a Chiddush, we wouldn't have known that in any of the other cases. However, the Gemara asks, "Hanuchal amad masni la sefer." That works out according to, we said yesterday in the Gemara, we had two different explanations what part of the Mishnah that statement goes on. Rabba Bar Oven had said that it goes on the sefer, Rabba Oshi had said it goes on the Risha, the case of the Eishes Ish. So, "Hanuchal amad masni la sefer." So it works out well according to Rabba Bar Hanan, Rabba Bar Oven, who said that it refers to the case of the Shavuya. So therefore, we need the case of the Shavuya because we want to add a chiddush over there, that even though afterwards Edom came and told us that she's a Shavuya, so that sort of destroys a Pesha also, a Pesha Hitir, but once we already gave her the Heter to remarry, then she can go ahead and remarry. El Olamad Masni Ladre, what? Yeah, well, that's what Gemara said yesterday, that even once they gave her the Heter, that's enough, yeah. El Olamad Masni Ladre, but according to Rabbi Oshi, who says that last clause of the Mishnah is referring back to the Resha, to the Eishes Ish, who says that I was married and now I'm divorced. Why, according to him, would you have to have the part about the Shavuya? According to him, that the part about the Shavuya, you can directly derive from the part about the Eishes Ish. And there's no chiddush in it, because it's true. And we're saying that the din, that last din, that imnisis, that if they gave her permission to be married, then loitese, applies to both cases. You don't need the same case. To the Shavuya, and once you know it by the Eishes Ish, automatically you know it by the Shavuya. The answer is, Mishum de Kaboyla Misni, Shtei Nashim Shinishbu. True, but even according to that opinion, the fact is, the continuation of that Mishnah is the one from the top of Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph, the Chaf Gimel Amud Beis, that we learned yesterday, the case of the two women where each one says about herself versus each one says about her friend. We need that. We had to mention the case of the Shavuya in order to introduce that Mishnah.
Why?
Well, because how else would the Mishnah of Shtei Nashim Shinishbu fit in over here? Once we're talking about a Shavuya, once we mention about how a Pesha also a Pesha Hitzer applies to a Shavuya, then it makes sense to continue with discussing a case of the women making a claim about themselves versus making a claim about their friend.
And that couldn't be done just simply by introducing the case of the two Shavuyas?
What does one have to do with the other? Yeah, no. One second. The case of the two Shavuyas is following on the case of one woman who says that I was a Shavuya. If you didn't have that case, if the Mishnah had only mentioned the case of the Eishes Ish, then why all of a sudden are we bringing in Shtei Nashim Shenishbu? We needed the part about V'chein Ha'isha Shenishbeis, one woman who was taken captive, where she has a Pesha Asa Pesha Hitzer, as an introduction to the Mishnah about Shtei Nashim. And what? Yeah, but we still need something. There still needs to be a reason why it's in the Perek over here.
As an introduction.
Yeah. Okay. So why indeed do we need that case of the two women? The answer is because that Mishnah is telling us a chiddush. You might think to be concerned that maybe these women are trying to do a favor for each other. Each one is going to come to Beis Din and say, my friend is tahor. Maybe they colluded ahead of time. You know what? We know if we go to Beis Din and each of us claims about ourselves, then we know Beis Din is not going to believe us. Let's you go and say about me. I'll go and say about you, and everybody will be good. Maybe we should be concerned about that. Kamash Malan, that's why we needed that Mishnah. The Mishnah about Shnei Noshim. Okay. V'chein Shnei Anoshim Lomali. Fine. Why do we need our Mishnah then about the case of the two men? The reason is, Mishum Dekabayla Mishnah Plukta de Rabbi Yehuda V'Rabbanan. Because in our Mishnah, you have the Machlokas of Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan, whether one aid is good enough to be Mila, somebody to say that somebody is a Kohen. When it comes to a Shavuya, everybody agrees one aid is enough, so we needed that only because we needed to talk about Goyimlin. Our Mishnah, we're going to talk about actually soon, we're going to talk about now actually, and on Amud Beis, whether our Mishnah is dealing with the matter of Goyimlin or not. But at any rate, the point is not to say whether we do or don't worry about Gomlin. That we would have understood further this idea that each one of them is going to do a favor for the other and give edus on him. But it's to tell us rather that unlike in the previous Mishnah, here Rabbi Yehuda argues and says that you can't say that one aid is not enough. So that's why we need this whole sequence of Mishnah. Yeah.
Reciprocal.
Such a kosher
chesed.
No, whatever. You could also be talking about a case, for example, you know, Lav Davka, we're talking about that the people are actually lying. You know, you could have, for example, in the case of these two people, you know, each one of them has reason maybe to think that he's a kohen, but he doesn't have solid proof of it. But he figures, you know what, you know, you go ahead and say in Beis Din, you know, and they'll accept that, and, you know, that'll be good enough.
Funny we speak about that because yesterday I just asked you a question.
Yeah, but wait. We'll go after that. We'll get to that. Okay. Tana Rabban. Ani koyin b'chaveri koyin. If somebody says, if two people come to town and one of them says, I'm a koyin and my friend is a koyin, so we say about himself we don't believe him, we do believe him about his friend. So in what sense do we believe him? Nema l'achile b'truma. We believe him in the sense that we can give this friend truma to eat. We'll talk about later on whether we mean truma d'araisa, d'rabbanan, whatever. But right now we're just saying truma. The ainan nema l'asiyah isha, but you don't believe him to give him truma to eat.
But from where? He's done truma?
No. In other words, that people who are taking truma, farmers who are taking truma,
right,
will allow him to go and get some of it.
Ah.
Yeah. We'll get into the details soon, but wait. The ainan nema l'asiyah isha, but we don't believe him insofar as marrying him off. To a woman who has yichus. One second. Ad shiyu, gimel, unless you have three people, shnayim me'idin alzeh or shnayim me'idin alzeh. If you have, you have to have two people giving edus on each one. So you have that, so you have the two people who came to town, Reuven and Shimon. They have to join together with them a third guy, Levi, let's say. Now Reuven and Levi together can say Shimon is a kohen. Shimon and Levi together can say Reuven is a kohen. And that's fine. Because then you have two Edim, and then there's less of a concern about Gremlin because Levi is involved over there, and nobody's saying Edus on him, so why would he join in unless there's something in it for him? No, he can't say Edus on himself. That's what I'm saying. Reuven and Shimon, Reuven and Levi say I'm Shimon. Shimon and Levi say I'm Reuven.
No, I say one person says I'm his friend.
No. He's one aid, but we're saying that one aid is not good enough. Yeah.
Nice.
Right. So now what's the difference? The difference is, so first of all, what are we talking about when we say lahasiya isha? So Rashi says that we make a milah when it comes to yuchsin. We're not going to allow him to marry a woman who has yichus unless we know he's for sure he's a kohen. So Tosfos understands Rashi to mean that the problem might be, what if these guys, forget about whether these guys are kohenim or yisraelim, what if they're mamzerim or something? Then you have a real problem. They can't marry a bas yisrael. But Tosfos themselves argues on that. No, there's no such thing as a kohen. No, if they're mamzer, they're not considered a kohen. If they're mamzer, then they're effectively a chalom. Yeah. Tosfos brings from various gemaras that we don't have a problem with that. You don't have to assume that somebody who just came to town, there's no reason to suspect that he's a mamzer or not. So if it's just a matter of that you're suspecting he might be a cholol or not, what's the problem? A Bas Yisrael is allowed to marry a cholol. A kohen is not allowed to marry a cholola, but any Jewish woman is allowed to marry a cholol. So therefore, Tosfos explains differently. Tosfos explains that when we say here that we don't believe in Lasia Isha, doesn't mean he's not allowed to get married to any woman he wants. It means, it means like this. The Gemara explains in Kedushin, the Mishnah and the Gemara explain in Kedushin, in certain cases, in order to verify that somebody is a Kohen, you have to check several generations back in his family to make sure that there's no Psula Yichus. So you can have somebody, you can have a woman from such a family where her lineage is known back for several generations, therefore it's known that her family are Kohenim. If she were to go, or not necessarily the Kohenim, in the case of the woman, it could be Yisraelim, but whatever, that they're Miyuchasim, there's no Mamzerim or what have you among them. If she goes and marries a Kohen, no problem, good, now the children are Kohenim. If this person, who's a Safek Kohen, because we're saying there's only one aid on him, if he were to go and marry one of these women, not that he's not allowed to, but if he does, she loses that advantage of her family Yichus. Because now at this point, we're not sure, he might be a Cholol.
Meaning
that now when this person might be a cholol, we have no way of knowing, just because there's one aid on him, there's a kohen, doesn't prove anything. Therefore, you can't now assume that their children automatically are kohenim because of her previously checked Jesus.
How many generations?
He might be a cholol. The Gemara discusses over there, you have to go back three or four generations. It depends on the circumstances exactly, but yeah. We'll learn it at the end of Kedushin in about a year, Rez Hashem. Whatever the case, though, the idea is, Rashi says that when it comes to Yuchsin, we're more strict. When it comes to Truma, we can be more lenient, but when it comes to Yuchsin, we want to be more strict.
My question is, why is Truma more lenient than Yuchsin?
So, because when it comes to Yuchsin, we'll talk soon what kind of Truma we're talking about, whether we're talking Doraisa or Dirabanan. Wait. Just a minute. Wait. Rabbi Yehuda says, even as far as eating truma, you can't believe him just on the basis of one aid. Adji or shlosha, again, unless you have three. Shnayim eid and alzeh, shnayim eid and alzeh. You have to have two people giving aiders on each one. Now, the question, which is basically the same as in our Mishnah, where the Tanakhama had said that as long as each of them gives aiders on the other one, it's good enough, and Rabbi Yehuda had said you need two. Now, the question is, does that imply that Rabbi Yehuda is worried about this concept of goimlin, that each of them might be saying eidus on the other as a favor to him, as a reciprocal favor?
For the reason that Rabbanon,
and that's why he would say that you need two. That's why he would say you need two in order to avoid the problem of goimlin. Rabbanon lo chayish le goimlin, whereas Rabbanon are not afraid about goimlin. Is that so? But we find elsewhere a Mishnah that says exactly the other way around. We learn in a Mishnah. Hachamorin shenichnas lahir, donkey drivers who used to bring grain and other foods with them, come into town. But Amar echad mehen, and one of them starts announcing, Shali chadash v'shachaveri yashan. My stuff is new. My is new grain. My friend over here, he has old grain. Old is usually better than new. It's dried out more. It's easier to grind, etc. No. So Tosfos discusses over here. Tosfos mentions over here later on in the Masechta, where we also bring this Mishnah, Rashi explains there that Chadosh and Yashan means Chadosh and Yashan as we're familiar with them nowadays, before or after Pesach. But Tosfos says that can't be the issue, because we're dealing over here with the question whether we believe them or not. We never find anywhere that Amaya Oretz. We find throughout Shas that Amaya Oretz are suspect about Trumas and Nisrus. And about Tumah Batara, we never find that they're suspect about selling Chadash grain as if it were Yashan. So if he says that it's Yashan, if he says that the other guy is Yashan, yes, we should take him at face value. Tosfos discusses another possibility that maybe Chadash and Yashan over here refers to Shemitah or not, but they also have the same problem. Amei Aretz are usually not suspect of being careless with Shemitah. Anyway.
But we don't believe them.
So Tosfos ends up saying that it's better to go with Rashi's pshat, that Chodosh and Yashin over here is not talking about a matter of Isser. It's an example of where one of them is putting down his own stuff and praising the others. And he continues, Shali Eini Mesukan Meshachavedi Mesukan, my stuff is not Meiser, but my friend is, Eini Neman, and we don't believe him. We don't believe him because he's an Amaretz. You can't trust him about Meisers. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Neman, and Rabbi Yehuda says you do believe him.
Truma, you can.
Well, Truma, all the Amei Oretz were careful about Truma. They were not careful with Maisers. No, some of them were not careful with Maisers. Even when it comes to Maisers, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, Roiv Amei Oretz Maisers. Hey, most Amei Oretz did take Maisers properly, but there was a significant minority that did not, and that's why we have the whole concept of Demai. So what are we saying over here? Now it sounds like why are the Chachamim not believing him? Because it sounds like a case of Gomlin. What's going to happen? Maybe they made up with them between themselves beforehand. You know what? When we come to town A, I'll claim that your stuff is good, so everybody should buy from you. Then we'll go to town B, and you'll return me the favor. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda seems to not be worried about that. So how does that fit with what we're saying in our Mishnah and in the Braisa, that Rabbi Yehuda is worried about Gomlin and the Chachamim or not? So Rabbi Ada Ba'ava says in the name of Rav, you're right, you have to flip around the opinions in the Braisa and maybe in our Mishnah as well. Abaya says you don't have to flip around the opinion. Because when it comes to Demai, we're more Mekel. Rabbi Yehuda is willing to be Mekel over there because Rabbi Ada Ba'ava is Meister name, because the fact is most Gamay artists do take Meister, so therefore there's less of a reason to be concerned when he's saying that my stuff is not Meister, fine. He's saying my stuff is not Meister, fine. You know, we take him at his word. He made a Chaticha B'Yisura. But if he says that his friends is Meiser, fine, we can take him at his word, because most Amei Oretz do take Meiser.
So one case we say that the Rav do take Meiser, but a significant majority...
A significant minority don't. So therefore, usually we say we don't trust them on Demai. But if we have one saying on the other, then Rabbi Yehuda is willing to say, you know what? Yes, usually I would be concerned about Gomlin, but in this case, it's not just a matter of in this case you have the chazaka that most Amei Oretz do take Meiser, and therefore that's good enough for us.
What kind of chazaka is that?
That's a chazaka because the majority do.
And the significant minority doesn't.
Okay, but it's a minority. And in many cases in halacha, we find for that reason we're makel in various aspects of Demai. This is one of them. However, Amar Rava, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda Kasha, Rabbanan, Rabbanan like Kasha. So how does that help us? You find for the contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda's statement that in our Mishnah and the Braisa, he's saying that we're worried about Gomlin, about two people claiming that each other is a Kohen, but he's makel when it comes to Demai. Fine, what about the Rabbanan? We have a Kasha between them. In our Mishnah, they're not worried about Gomlin, and in the Mishnah in Demai, they are. Ella, so no. We have to answer like this. Yes, the two statements of Rabbi Yehuda are not contradictory because we just said when it comes to Demai, he's willing to be Mekel. When it comes to anything else, he's Machmir. The Rabbanan has Rabbanan like Kasha. When it comes to the Rabbanan also, it's not a Kasha. There's not necessarily a contradiction. Because, just like we say, we'll see in Amud Beis, that there was a case about which Rav Chama bar Okva said, that it's talking about a case where the person has the tools of his craftsman's tools, his business tools with him. We'll see in a second what that means. Hachanam b'shiklei umunusu b'yadeh. The same thing over here. We're talking about when he's carrying his tools with him. Now, what do we mean by that? So Rashi says it means like this. Both these donkey drivers are coming to town with a load of grain. When people who go from place to place selling grain, they're going to bring along with them the tools of their trade. You need to bring along. Rashi gives us an example, a thing to use to level off the measure. They used to, in those days, when you bought a certain measure, like a saw measure or whatever of grain, they'd heap it up, and then they had a special piece of wood or whatever. The Gemara and Baba Basra discusses the details of how this piece of wood has to be manufactured, but whatever, they would take it and they'd use it. They'd level off the top of it. They'd level off the top of the measurement, and then you'd buy it. That way you were certain that you're getting a full measure, but not heaping full. And that was the standard. So a person who's going from place to place selling grain is going to take one of those with him. If he has it with him, why would he be carrying not only the grain? You could say, fine, the grain, if he just has grain, fine, maybe he's not intending to sell it yet. But if he has with him his machak, this piece of wood, it shows that he's obviously going to sell. Well, then if he's going to sell, why is he putting down his stuff? Why is he telling everybody, you know what, my friend's stuff is better? There's more of a reason to be concerned about Gomlin. That's what the Rabbanan are saying.
Because it's against his own interest.
Because it's against his own interest, yeah.
The
machak is a kind of stick.
Number one,
that's the point. The fact that he has it with him shows that he came here to sell his grain.
So
Right. Otherwise, why would he bother schlepping it along? Tosfos quotes from Rabbeinu Hananel that the Shekliru Menusa B'Yodeh means something else. It's not talking about the donkey drivers, it's actually going back to the case of the Kohen. If you have somebody who, if you have two people came to town again, you have Reuben and Shimon, and Reuben is saying, I'm Shimon, he's a Kohen. If Shimon has with him, now Kohenim in those days, it used to be very common because of issues of Tumah V'Tahara, it was a very common thing for Kohenim to use Kalim that are not able to become Tamei. For example, we've talked about this before, Kalim made out of stones, or clay glolim, clay adama, whatever we've talked about before, that they found in digging in the old city of Yerushalayim about 40 years ago, they found a house that the burnt house, it's called, they have a museum there now, which was a family of Kohenim lived there, and all the utensils in the house were made out of stone, so they're not makabel tuma. So if this guy, Shimon, who somebody is saying Edus on him, that is Kohen, is carrying with him these types of utensils, that's Kohen Menusa B'Yodeh. It gives us strong reason to believe that he really is Kohen. He's extra careful, therefore, about Tumah V'Tahara, because he has to. He has to eat Tumah V'Tahara.
Because it's made of stone.
Because he's, right. He's carrying stone utensils with him instead of earthenware or whatever. That gives us more of a reason to think that he's a Kohen, to believe that he's a Kohen. Anyway, so there's our answer. So in other words, Rashi's explanation is B'Shekliru Menusa B'Yodeh gives us a reason to not believe the donkey driver, and Rabbeinu Hananel's explanation is the other way around, that the Kliru Menusa gives us a reason to believe the guy who is claimed as a Kohen. Okay, V'Heicha Itma de Rav Chama Ba'Okva, what's the original context of the statement of Rav Chama Ba'Okva? Aha, it's on the following Mishnah, the Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah at Taharas, HaKadar She'iniach B'dei Ra'isav, if a potter, who's a potter, or a guy who sells pottery, puts down his pots. Now he's a chaver, Rashi says. He's a chaver, so he's careful with Tumah V'Tahara, and therefore his pots are also tahar. But, as we learned at the end of Chagiga, Ame Ha'aretz, throughout the year, are considered to be tameh, midrabanan, because they're not careful with Tumah V'Tahara, only Yom Tov time do we say they're tahar. So this potter put down his pots, V'yorad Lishtes Mayim Min Ha'yor, and he went down to drink water from the river. He left his pots there by the side of the road. Aknimius Tahoris, the ones on the inside that are further away from the street, are Tahar. We assume that nobody touched them. Vachitzonis Tmeis, but the ones that are towards the outside are Tameis. They're considered Tameis, yeah, because we, yeah. Now, so the question is, Vatanya Eleva Elu Tmeis. That Mishnah says that there's a difference between the ones closer and further away, but we have a Braisa that says all of them are Tameis. And on that, Amar Rav Chama Ba'Okva, there is the original context where Rav Chama Ba'Okva used this expression, B'Shekleyum Menusa B'Yodeh, that they were talking about where he has his tools of the trade with him, he has his potter's tools with him. In other words, if a guy comes into town carrying a bunch of pots, people are not necessarily going to think that he has them for sale. People are going to think they're his own pots, so nobody's going to touch them. But if they see that he's carrying the tools that a potter usually uses, they're going to say, oh, well, he's coming to town to sell them. In that case, we may as well check out the merchandise, and they'll start touching them and whatever. So therefore they become tummy. The Ravid, by the way, has a different explanation in this context of Vishkleo Menusa B'Yodeh. He says we're talking about that the potter has with him, that the kind of pots that the potter has with him are the really good quality ones that he makes when he's first apprenticing as a potter. So like now everybody realizes he's a potter because the fact that he has these really nice looking ones for sale, are there where he was doing those, like so to speak, in order to get his potter's degree, Anyway, because now everybody's going to touch them because everybody figures he has them here for sale anyway, we may as well check it out. Okay, V'atanya Elu V'Elu Tahoris, don't we have another braisa that says that all of them are tahor? And the answer is, Amar Rav Chama Ba'Okva B'She'ein Kleyim Menusa B'Yodeh. There we're talking about where he doesn't have his tools of his trade with him.
When
and then they're all tahor, because nobody's going to touch him. Well then, the question is, so we have three cases. We have a case where all of them are tamei, which is where he has his Kleyim Menusa with him. You have a case where they're all tahor when he doesn't have his Kleyim Menusa. And then we have the Mishnah that said that the inner ones are tahor and the outer ones are tamei. What's that talking about? So what about the Mishnah where it said that there's a difference between the ones closer and further away? What's the case? If he has his tools with him, we said they're all tahor. If he doesn't have his tools, they're all tahor. What's the case in between? The answer is, we're talking about that it's next to the Rishos Rabim. Umishum chifufei Rishos Rabim. It's because you have the chifufei, the pegs of Rishos Rabim. What happened? Rashi explains it like this. In those days, they didn't have sidewalks. You had the buildings, and then you have the Rishos Rabim, where everybody walks. The problem is, A person who has a house or a store or whatever isn't going to want that people walking down the street, them, their animals or whatever, are going to rub against his walls. Eventually, they're going to make the wall collapse. No, that's not me. They're going to make the wall collapse. So what would people do? They'd stick pegs in by the sides of the Rishus Rabin, to keep them a little further away from the wall, so that you'd have something not really like a sidewalk. The idea was that people shouldn't walk there. The idea was people will still walk in the middle, but they'll be a few inches or whatever away from the wall. This potter put his pots down in that area, in that sort of no man's land between the buildings and the Rishus Rabin. So what happens, as it is, because the pegs are there, the Rishus Rabin is narrower than it would otherwise be, so as it is, people are always brushing up against the pegs or the rocks or whatever it is there are on the sides over there. When he puts his pots over there, inevitably people are going to be brushing against them also. So therefore, it's not so much we're talking about that people are going to look at the pots and say, hey, there's pots for sale, let's check them out. It's rather, he put them in a place where the ones that are closer to Rishus Rabim, inevitably people are going to touch them as they walk by, or Rashi says actually their clothes will drag along the pots and their clothes are considered Tameh. So that's why the ones closer to Rishus Rabim, so you have two rows of them, so you have the Rishus Rabim ends here, the pegs are set up over here, the wall of the building is over here, it's no man's land over here, he put his pot. So you have row one of pots is next to the Shusar Abim, therefore it's Tomei. All the ones further away, nobody's brushing by them, and therefore they remain Tomei. We're not worried about if they touch each other. One Kli Cheres is not Matamei, another one. Kli Cheres anyway only become Tomei from the inside.
But we didn't say they're all just Kli Cheres.
A potter is somebody who makes Kli Cheres.
Only Kli Cheres.
Yeah. Hakadr, we said. Somebody was selling pots. Yeah, your standard pots in those days were over there. Yeah, what?
Didn't intend to sell the pots.
In this case, Lavdavka, did he intend to sell the pots? Right. Yeah. So that takes care of, the contradiction. So it comes out, by the way, that even according to this explanation, what we're saying is, according to the Rabbanan, there's no contradiction because we're talking about Klei Menusah B'Yadei versus not. According to Rabbi Yehuda, since that answer doesn't work, we still have to use the previous answer that in the case of Dmai he's willing to be Mekel, whereas in the case of Kohuna he's more Machmer.
We cannot apply in this case.
So in other words, both answers are true. That answer explains why Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah is worried about Gomlin, and in the case of Dmai he's not. Conversely, according to the Chachamim, we use this answer about Kleo Menusah B'Yadei to say that in the case of the junkie drivers, we are worried about Gomlin. But whereas in the case of the Kohanim, we're not.
What do the Chachamim make about the case of
What do you mean? They would say, very nice, B'dmaihi kilu, but on the other hand, Kleo Menusah B'Yadei, the guy has the tools with him. Why would he be carrying along his machak if he doesn't intend to sell his grain? The Ibo Yisemo, or another possibility, we could say, forget about this whole business of Goimlin or not. Let's say that neither Rabbi Yehuda nor the Chachamim in our Mishnah is concerned about Goimlin. So we could say then that, the Chachamim ordinarily are not worried about Goimlin, but in the case of the donkey drivers, they are because Kleo Menusah B'Yadei. Rabbi Yehuda normally would be concerned about it, but in the case of our Mishnah, he's not. But then the Machloikas wouldn't really be about Gomlin. Another possibility, you could say, the Machloikas in our Mishnah would be, given that we see a person eating Tumah, can we assume on that basis that he's a Kohen who has Yichus? So what happens? Rabbi Yehuda figures like this. If you allow him based on 1/8, fine, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, if it was just a matter of him eating Tumah, then fine, we could accept 1/8 for that. But what's the problem? People see him eating truma, they're going to think he's a kohen. To actually make him considered a kohen as far as yuchsin, that you really need to aid him, he says. Since malin mitruma liyuchsin, since seeing that he's eating truma allows us to consider him a full-fledged kohen, therefore you need to aid him to begin with, to allow him to eat truma. V'rabbanan savri, v'rabbanan... So Mamalan Matrumal Yusin from Mithlig. So the Machlokes is, Rabbi Yehuda is saying you could, therefore you need to aid him to begin with. The Chacham is saying it's no problem. Even if you see someone eating Truma, that in and of itself is not a proof that he's a Kohen, for reasons that we'll talk about later and tomorrow. And therefore, no problem. You can allow him to eat Truma based on 1/8. There's no concern based on that somebody is going to think he's a full-fledged Kohen.
For Yusin.
For Yusin, yeah.
And why would he be concerned for...
Because we said before, by yuchsin, we want to be more machmir.
No, no, I understand that.
Yeah.
No, but why it's not a concern for the chachamim, and it's a concern for the yehudim.
That's the question. Are we malin mitzruma the yuchsin? Do we say that automatically when a person eats truma, then we automatically can consider him, if we see somebody who we didn't know before eating truma, can we assume on that basis that he's a kosher or kohen, or not?
Right.
Yeah.
So the chachamim don't agree with
that. They say that you can have the guy eating truma very nice. That's not going to be good enough proof that he's miyuchas. Yes, if you want to declare him miyuchas, you're going to need to aid him.
And yeah. Rabbi Yehuda would say,
once you see him eating truma, you're able to assume that he's miyuchas. Therefore, to begin with, to allow him to eat truma, you need to aid him.
Truma has a chi of mitzvah. Yuchsin,
we're talking about, in other words, because if he's not a kohen, if he's a chalal, then any woman he marries becomes a chalala. Their children are going to be chalalim. If they have a daughter, that's going to be a real problem as far as her marrying a kohen. We're going to see in a minute. The Gemara is going to explain in a minute that there might be reasons to think that to think that maybe we should be more lenient with Truma. We'll see. Tosfos, by the way, points out the Tosfos.
Still didn't answer the question whether it's Truma or Rabbanan.
We'll get to that a little bit today and then more tomorrow. Tosfos points out, by the way, on this are printed on Chafei Amud Aleph for some reason that. Isn't there an issue over here? We know that besides a kohen, also an eved is allowed to eat truma. An eved of a kohen is allowed to eat truma. So why would we say automatically because you see a person eating truma, you might think that he's a kohen, which is Rabbi Yehuda's position, as opposed to saying that he's an eved of a kohen. So Tosfos discusses the.
In the street,
the fact that if you see them eating truma. So Tosfos discusses then that we're talking about not just eating truma, we're talking about him actually going to the granary and getting truma. We learned in Yevamos that an eved of a kohen is not allowed to do that precisely for that reason, because we don't want people to think that he's a kohen. So we're not talking about eating truma necessarily, we're talking about actually getting a portion of it in the granary. And then Tosfos Yishonim adds that actually you would kind of need both. You'd need to see that he got the truma and that he ate it, because otherwise maybe he got it in order to give to his master or whatever. Anyway, and that's the problem. That's why we need. That's why that. Not necessarily. How would they know? You don't necessarily see. You have a person walking down the street. You don't know whether he's doing mitzvahs or not. Okay, Iboyelahu. Now they had a question. Mal halos mishtoris leyuchsin. Are you allowed to assume that somebody is a kohen based on a shtar? If you see that on a shtar, somebody's name is written that he's a kohen, is that enough evidence to consider him a kohen?
Strictly talking about kohanim, not levim.
Yeah, there's no reason. With levim, it's not really relevant. The question is, hechidomi. What case are we talking about? What's written in the shtar? If it's that the person is signed as one of the aidim, that he writes ploini by ploini hakoyin aid, how does that help us? Man kamasi dilobei. Nobody's saying aid is on him. Why would we think that we should believe that? That's no different than him coming to Beis Din and saying, I'm a koyin. The answer is, lo tzricha. No, the case we're talking about, dixivei ani ploini koyin lovisi monim ploini. What if this one person who's claiming that he's a kohen is the borrower, for example? So he writes in the shtar, I, Pliny ben Pliny HaKohen, have borrowed a mana from so-and-so, v'chasimu sadi. And then the edim signed on the shtar. Well, that's the question. Mai, what do we say? Do we say a mana shev shtar komasadi? Or the edim, when they're signing, they're just signing on the fact that the loan took place. They're not going into the details of whether he's a kohen or not. Or maybe they're testifying on everything that says in the shtar, including then, effectively, they're testifying that he's a kohen. So, Rav Huna v'Rav Chista, chad ama malin v'chad ama ein malin. So it's actually a machlokes. Between Rav Huna and Rav Chista, one says that yes, that's enough evidence to declare him a kohen, the other one says no.
The one who says yes,
because he says that the Edim are saying on everything. They're obviously signing on everything, yeah. Tosfos points out, by the way, that there is a case over here where there's no question that the Edim are verifying the fact that he's a Kohen. Namely, there can be a case where there's no question. Namely, the Gemara discusses in Baba Basra a case where you have two people with the same name and the same father's name living in the same city. So what happens when it comes to writing a shtar? If you write Yosef and Shimon borrowed money, you could have either one of them might be on the hook. So what do you do, actually? So what you do is you look at their grandfather's names. If one is Yosef ben Shimon ben Reuben and the other is Yosef ben Shimon ben Levi, then write that. If even that doesn't help, then whatever. You keep on going until you find something unique. Suppose that one of them is a Kohen and one of them is not. You write HaKohen. Then, because you have to carefully write to make sure that you're not mixing them up, therefore, there's no question in that case to aid him of verifying that he's a Kohen, because that's the whole point, you're having to write that way.
That's according to both opinions.
Everybody would agree to that. Right. We're talking about a normal case where there's no such duplication of names. And there's a shach in Choshen Mishpat in the halachos of signing and verifying a shtar that has a long discussion about the pros and cons of that when we in what cases we would say that the Edim do in fact know for a fact when he writes on himself that I'm a Kohen, that they know that for a fact.
So the halacha is that in some cases.
So in some cases yes, but in some cases not. Yes. Now they had another question. What about if we see that somebody is duchening? Can you assume on that basis that he's a kohen, that he's a full-fledged kohen as far as yichus? And we can say you can ask that question according to both opinions, both that we said before Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan disagree whether truma is enough evidence to say that he's a kohen. According to either one of them, you could ask this question about duchening.
Why can't we say that about what we say about the woman, that she would not have the chutzpah to testify in front of her husband if she's not, she may, what?
Listen. Kiboylamanda Omar Mylan, you could argue, you could ask the question according to the opinion who says that truma is enough evidence to assume that he's a kohen because Hani Mila truma davan mizi. Truma is more serious. There's misa midesh chayim involved. Avon the fees kapayim de istu esse, but when it comes to duchening, there's only an istu esse involved. If a zohar gets up and duchens, he's only over on an esse, which it says to the kohenim kosevor chosben Israel, implying what everybody else know. No, maybe there's no difference. Maybe we would say, just like with maybe we would say, yes, Truma and Nasir's Kapayim are the same thing. You would argue that the person is not going to be over, and therefore you can assume he's a Kohen. Incidentally, by the way, Rashi points out over here that there's an Issa Essa, or the Gemara points out over here actually, that there's an Issa Essa in a Zohar getting up and duchening. There's an interesting Tosfos in Shabbos that where Rabbeinu Tam says, there's a Gemara over there where Rabbi Yossi says, that I always listen to what my friends say. If they would tell me go up and duchen, then I would. And Tosfos says, yeah, because I mean, what's the problem with a Zohar getting up and duchening? There's no Issa in it. And everybody asks on Tosfos, what do you mean? We have a Gemara over here that says that it's an Issa Essa. So one very interesting answer is the Haflah gives is, He says like this. He says, just like there's a mitzvah for the Kohenim to bench everybody else, there's a mitzvah for the Yisraelim to be benched. According to that law, when you're there in shul, when duchening takes place, you're helping the Kohenim fulfill their mitzvah.
To be benched by a Kohen.
Yeah, so what happens, therefore? So the law says like this. If the only person who's getting up and duchening is a Zor, then yes, that's what our Gemara is saying over here. He's over on an Esser. Because he's preventing the Yisraelim from accomplishing their part of the mitzvah. They're not getting benched by a Kohen. On the other hand, if he's up there with other Kohenim, there's no issue in it. That's what Tosfos is saying over there in Shabbos. There's no issue in it. The other Jews are getting benched by the Kohenim anyway. He's kind of along for the ride. There's no issue in it.
So it's really the group, whether there's a group.
Whether there's a group there or not, yeah. Not really a group, but somebody else. Yeah. And that would be another matter, right? So they talk about the question, right? If he was a Zohar, it would be a Brachal Batala. But okay, one possible answer on that is that in those days, not necessarily would all the Kohen make the Bracha. You could have had that one Kohen says the Bracha, and they all are Yotze with his.
Somebody said, what makes you special? What did you do? He says, I always listen to my friends.
That's the Gemara. It's in Shabbos where Rabbi Yossi says, I was never over on what my friends tell me. If my friends tell me, go up and duchen, then I would. Yeah.
Assuming that he always duchen with other people.
No, but that's right. So that's the thing. So according to the Haflah, he's saying that if they would tell me there's other Kohenim up, there's Kohenim up there already, and they would tell me, go join them, then I would. Yeah.
Not otherwise.
Yeah. Anyway. So that's one way of looking at it. And then we can also ask the question, according to the Rabbanon, who say that just because a person is eating truma is not enough evidence to declare him a kohen. That might be true of truma, which is eaten in private. You don't have the person that doesn't walk around in public eating truma. So therefore, you might have argued that the fact that maybe you saw him eating truma in private may be fine. He figures he can get away with it. Abel Nasius Kapayim did for Hesia, but Duchening takes place in public. He loved Koyen Hu, but it, so if he was not a Koyen, Kula Haile Maxif Inish Nafshe, maybe he wouldn't be so chutzpedik as to go Duchen in public when he knows he's not a Koyen. Maybe there's no difference. So again, we have a machlokas. Rav Chista v'Rav Avina, chad ama malin, chad ama ein malin. Again, one opinion says that you can assume if you see a person duchening, you can assume that he's a koyin miyuchas, and the other opinion is not.
Because of chutzpah?
Because of these two possibilities. Because of these two considerations. On the one hand, truma might be more of a reason to say that he's a koyin because he wouldn't eat truma knowing that he's chayiv misabide shemayim, whereas he might be willing to be over on the esser of duchening when he's not a koyin. On the other hand, maybe he wouldn't have the chutzpah to do it in public, whereas truma he would figure he could get away with in private. So, Omelet of Nachum Yitzchak Rava. So, Rav Nachum Yitzchak asks Rava, "What's the din? Maula halas minisias kapayim liyuchsin. What's the din on that?" Omelet, so he tells him, "What are you asking me? Spoke to the Rav Chista v'Rav Avina. It's a machlokes." Okay, Rava says. Rav Nachman says, "Hilchos amai." Okay, who's the halacha like? Omelet, so Rava tells him, "I don't know, but I know mas nisi yadina. I can tell you the following brisa, from which we can derive, we'll learn some of it today, and we'll continue tomorrow with the discussion. We can deduce from this brisa something about this din, about Nesias Kapayim and Yuchsi. The Tanya, Rabbi Yossi, I'm a G'dayla Chazaka. Chazaka is a very powerful thing. When a person has a Chazaka on something, you can't take it away, based in can't easily take him away from it. The Pasuk says like this. The Pasuk in Ezra and also in Nehemiah describes that it lists all the families of Jews who came back to build the second Beis Hamikdash, who came back from Babel. So it lists the families from Yehuda, from Binyamin, Koyanim, etc. And then it lists like this. With Bnei HaKoyanim, from among the Koyanim, you had the following families. Bnei Chavaya, Bnei HaKoyt, and Bnei Barzilai. Asher Lokach Mibnois Barzilai Agilad Isha. There was somebody, one of their ancestors had married a daughter of Barzilai Agiladi. Barzilai Giladi was a person who lived in the time of the David HaMelech. He was very rich, and during the Pasuk describes in Shmuel how during the time when David is running away from Absalom, then this Barzilai supported him very generously. So one of the ancestors of this family married a daughter of Barzilai, Vayikare Ashimam, and therefore the family was called after their name. Eila Bikshuk Sovam Amisyasim, these three families, Chavai, Hakoyt, and Barzilai, looked for their Kisve Yichus, they were looking for their documents to show that they really are Kohenim, Volein Nimtzu, but they couldn't find them. Vayigoylo mina Kohuna, and therefore they were rejected, they were Nifsol from the Kohuna. They were Nifsol, we assume, given that they don't have a Ksav Yachas, then their ancestors were Kohenim, but that doesn't tell us anything. They might have married women who are apostles. Therefore, we have to consider them halalim. In different Mepharshim talk about different possibilities, whether the problem was that maybe since the family is called Barzilai, the Malbim says this, for example, since the family was called the family of Barzilai, so there were two families then. There was a family of Barzilai, there was a Koyan family of Barzilai, and a Yisrael family of Barzilai, the actual descendants, Ben Achaben, of Barzilai Agiladi. Now, we're not sure, these guys, which one they're from. So are they Koyanim or are they Israelim? And if they thought that, and if they weren't sure all this time, over the generations, they may have married women who were apostle of the Kohana. The Haflah brings up an interesting idea. He says maybe even the possibility is that they were Avadim. If we're calling them after the name of their female ancestor, the daughter of Barzilai, why would they be doing that? Only if their father had been an Eved, because Eved ain't like Chayis. You don't go by the father, you go by the mother then. Anyway. So Vayomer Hatir Shasa Lahem, so Hatir Shasa said to them, Hatir Shasa is a name for Nehemiah. Rashi explains in Kiddushin that he was called Hatir Shasa because he was the Saramashkim for the king. In that capacity, a Saramashkim has to taste the wine before it's offered to the king to make sure it's not poisoned, as we know from the story of Bigson and Teresh in the Megillah. That wine is Yain Nesef, or at least Stam Yain, and the Chachamim gave him a heter to drink it because it's part of his job. So therefore, he was called Hatir Shasa, which stands for Hitir Shasa. They gave him permission to drink. Yeah. Other Mepharshim on the Pasuk say Mover Pashtos that Hatir Shasa is a Persian government title, whatever it is. Anyway, Hatir Shasa, Nehemiah says to them, Asher lo yoichu mikodesh hakadoshim, they're not allowed to eat from the Kodesh Hakadoshim, which we'll talk tomorrow what that means, ad amoy koyin l'urim metumim, until there arises a koyin who wears the urim metumim. Which basically means when Mashiach comes, because they didn't have the urim metumim in the second Beis Hamikdash. Yeah. So what's going on? What is he telling them? Omalahem, Hareyatem Bechazkaschem. He tells them, it means, Rabbi Yossi says, that he told them, you can continue with your chazaka that you had until now. What did you eat? What special did you have to eat in Golos Babel? There weren't any kachim. The Beis Hamikdash is destroyed. What did you eat there that made you recognize this kachim? The kachim bull, truma, which can be eaten anywhere. Which can be eaten anywhere. And truma midrabanan applies in vavel as well, minim neviim, whatever it is. But so therefore afkan kachim bull. So now when we came back to Eretz Yisrael, you can continue eating truma.
That's
the power of chazaka. That's what we're saying. Given that they had that chazaka of eating, truma in Chutz La'aretz, then they can continue eating in Eretz Yisrael. So how does that relate to our thing over here? Let's go on two more lines and then we'll finish. The Isak Daitach Mailan Minasir's Kapayim Liuchsin. So Rava says, what's the proof from this braisa? If you're gonna tell me that the halacha is that when you see a person Bruchen, you can assume on that basis he's a Kohen, honey, keep him to power to your diary, also Lasukina, what's gonna happen the next time these people Bruchen, people are gonna think that they're real Kohenim, and that's gonna destroy Hatur Shasa's whole thing. He should have told them. Besides that, he should have told them that yes, you had a chazaka of Bruchening, but now you're gonna have to stop that. Obviously, that's not a concern. So therefore, obviously, the halacha must be that you can't. Just because a person is duchening is not proof that he's a kohen. And the answer is, shiny hacha de riyah chazkayu. No, mavdavka, because you could say over here, in this case, you know already that they have a weak chazaka. You see that everybody else... No, you see that when it comes to kachim, now that the Beis Hamikdash is built, you see that everybody else is eating kachim, you see that these families are not. Automatically, that makes us realize, you know what, there's got to be some kind of problem over here. So yes, they can duchen, and everybody's going to realize that doesn't make them a kohen. Tosfos explains differently that the riach eskayu is this very fact that they're called Bnei Barzilai, that they're called the family of Barzilai, who was Yisrael, and that they couldn't even find their chazaka. So yes, on that once that's established, then yes, when we see them duchening, nobody's going to assume on that basis that they're a kohen.
Because they're not eating truma.
No, because even if they're eating truma, in other words, but even if they're eating truma, which we'll talk tomorrow, what kind of truma, and even if they're duchening, that's not going to be enough to declare them kohenim. Because the riach is kayo, because the chazaka is weak. A regular person who moves to town and we see the next yom tov or whenever it is, there's duchening that he gets up in duchen. Maybe you would think that he's a kohen. But maybe that would allow us to think that he's a kohen. In this case, since already everybody sees that these Bnei Barzilai are not eating kachim, and they're called Bnei Barzilai, then that itself is going to tell people automatically, you know what, just because they're duchening doesn't mean anything.
That's, of course, when the Beis Hamikdash is...
When the Beis Hamikdash is in existence, yeah.
Something, of course, it doesn't apply afterwards.
Well, we'll get to it tomorrow.
They look for the archives and they didn't find it.